More news on the downside. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest summary of finance and property news to the 19th of May 2018. Today we start with bank culture and the next round of the Royal Commission. New ASIC chairman Jane Shipton was at the Australian Council of Superannuation Investors Conference in Sydney and was asked how seriously he was taking the threat to the financial system given the failures aired at the Royal Commission. He said the threat is great. As a former member of the finance profession, he said, as a person who is proud to be a financier, I find it jarring and disappointing that this is where we find ourselves. As a proud Australian who is returning from nearly 25 years overseas, it is very confronting that we find ourselves in this situation. The misconduct discussed at the Royal Commission, it must be addressed, he said. He also highlighted the proliferation of conflicts of interest in parts of the financial industry. It is clear to me that a number of institutions have not taken the management of conflicts of interest to heart, he said. This is verging on a systemic issue. Indeed, it is the source of much of the misconduct ASIC has been responding to and which is being highlighted by the Royal Commission. He expressed his surprise that many Australian firms have turned a blind eye to conflicts of interest as their businesses have grown. He said too often unacceptable conflicts were justified by firms on the basis that everyone else is doing it, even though it's the right thing to do to end them. A business culture that is blind to conflicts of interest is a business culture that does not have the best interest of its customer in mind. Moreover, it is one that is not observing the spirit as well as the letter of the law, he said. And these are all relevant comments in the light of the next round of the Royal Commission, which starts on the 21st of May. This round of public hearings will consider the conduct of financial services entities and their dealings with small and medium enterprises, and in particular in providing credit to businesses. The hearings will also explore the current legal and regulatory regimes, as well as self-regulation under the Code of Banking Practice. And they're going to use the same case study approach. They will be considering responsible lending to small businesses with ANZ, the Bank of Queensland, CBA, Westpac and Suncorp at the stand. They will then consider the approach of banks to enforcement management and monitoring of loans to businesses with CBA and Bankwest and NAB. Third will be product and account administration with CBA and Westpac, then the extension of unfair contract terms to small business contracts with ASIC, and finally, the code of banking practice with the ABA and ASIC. This should all be worth watching, as we are expecting more cases of misconduct and poor behaviour. Our small and medium business surveys highlight the problem many businesses have with getting credit and being treated fairly. And there is a link below if you'd like to grab a free copy of our report. So now to the statistics. The ABS data this week painted a rather unsettling picture. The latest unemployment data to April 2018 showed that employment growth is slowing. The trend unemployment rate rose from 5.53% to 5.54% in April, after the March figure was revised down, while the seasonally adjusted unemployment rate increased 0.1 percentage point to 5.6%. The trend participation rate increased to a further record high of 65.7% in April. And in line with the increasing participation rate, employment increased by around 14,000, with part-time employment increasing by 8,000 persons and full-time employment by 6,000 persons. But as we discussed in our separate post, jobs aren't what they used to be. Underutilisation, or those in work who want more work, continues to run at very high rates. And this is helping to explain the low wage growth, which was also reported by the ABS this week. This showed a further fall compared with last time, with the seasonally adjusted wage price index up just 0.5% in the March quarter, and that equates to 2.1% through the year. Seasonally adjusted, private sector wages rose 1.9% and the public sector grew at 2.3% through the year to March. We discussed all of this in our post, Some Disturbing Trends. In fact, you can mount an argument that the federal budget is already shot as a result. And for comparison, the average compensation for employees from the national accounts, which is December 2017, is tracking even lower at around 1.3%. And the latest inflation figure, remember, is sitting at 1.9%. An article in The Conversation this week by Stephen Kircher from the University of Sydney argued that the RBA is making an explicit trade-off between inflation and financial stability, which is weighing on Australian wages. In the past, he says, the RBA focused more on keeping inflation in check, and that's the usual role of the central bank. But the bank is playing more into concerns about financial stability risks in explaining why it is persistently undershooting the middle of its inflation target. And in the wake of the global financial crisis, the Federal Treasurer and the Reserve Bank Governor signed an updated agreement on what the bank should focus on in setting interest rates. This included a new section on financial stability. That statement made clear that financial stability was to be pursued without compromising the RBA's traditional focus on inflation. But the latest agreement, adopted when Philip Lowe became governor of the bank in 2016, means the bank can pursue the financial stability objective even at the expense of the inflation target, at least in the short term. And he concluded that when the RBA governor and the Federal Treasurer negotiate their agreement on monetary policy after the next election, the Treasurer should insist on reinstating the wording of the 2010 statement that explicitly prioritised the inflation target over financial stability risks. If the RBA continues to sacrifice its inflation target on the altar of financial stability risks, inflation expectation and wages growth will continue to languish, and the economy will underperform its potential. International funding costs continue to rise, with the US 10-year Treasury bond rising this week as yields were boosted after a report on US retail sales for April indicated that consumer spending is on track to rebound after a soft patch in the first quarter. Yields have been climbing higher since the Fed said at its May meeting that inflation is moving closer to its 2% target. The Fed, of course, raised rates in March and projected two more rate hikes this year, although many investors see three hikes as possible. This chart highlights the correlation between the 10-year bond yield and the quantitative tightening which is occurring, making the point again that the rate rises are directly correlated with the change in policy. LIBOR, the interbank benchmark, continued to rise, as we discussed in our post, The Problem with LIBOR. And this translates to higher mortgage rates in the US, with US headlines speaking of the highest mortgage rates in 7 years. And to be clear, we watch the US markets and especially the capital market rates because these movements impact the cost of bank funding here in Australia. And the Australian banks, especially the larger ones, need access to these funds to cover perhaps 30% of their mortgage books. As a result, there is pressure on mortgage rates locally. Canada is another market worth watching because it shares a number of the same characteristics as our own. The authorities tightened mortgage underwriting standards earlier in the year, and the results are now some significant slowing of purchase volumes and home prices, as you can see in this report.
To discuss what's going on here, we're joined by Cynthia Holmes. She's Associate Professor and Chair of the Real Estate Management Department at Ryerson University's Ted Rogers School of Business Management. It's nice to see you. When you look at these numbers, what do you see?
I see that the sales activity volume is really low, historically low. So this is one of the lowest, the quietest months we've seen, a quietest April for years and years, since 2009.
And what do you, obviously there's been policy implications, there's that stress test we talked about. What is it that's driving that not only lack of sales activity, but then people driving prices down as well?
I do think the mortgage stress test is having an impact. So starting in January 1st, a larger set of borrowers found it more difficult to qualify for mortgages, or they would qualify for smaller mortgages because of these new rules.
I'm going to read this because I want to make sure I get it right, because there's so much jargon to this. The average price of a home fell by 11%. That's compared to 2017.
Yes.
How much of that reflects the actual home-to-home comparison, and how much of it reflects people were buying different kinds of homes, smaller homes, whatever it may have been?
I think it's important to recognize that smaller homes are transacting now,
right,
partly because of the mortgage stress test. So
right,
all of us, when we go in to qualify with a bank, now that the stress test reduces the amount we can borrow, we have to turn to smaller homes like condominiums or townhouses because we can't qualify for such a big mortgage.
Right.
So as we shift into these smaller units and we transact those smaller units, the average sale price, the average transacted price goes down because we're looking at smaller houses.
Significantly, the lenders are discounting new loans to try to maintain mortgage underwriting volumes in the fading market, which is similar to the dynamics here, with some Australian lenders now offering discounts to property investors for the first time in a year or so. We hold to our view that credit growth will continue to slow as underwriting standards get tightened further. Investor lending has fallen by 16.1% over the year to March, whilst owner-occupied lending was off 2.2%, according to the ABS. The latest housing finance statistics showed that lending to owner-occupiers fell 1.9% in March. That's the highest rate of decline in over 2 years, and investor lending fell by 9% over the month. However, these figures are yet to reflect the latest round of credit tightening by the major banks, who face increased scrutiny amid damning evidence of irresponsible lending during the first round of the Royal Commission. Both the major banks and the RBA expect credit growth to slow. And we are now entering a credit crunch, which will reduce total mortgage volumes, we think, by around 10% over the next year. The chances are that people will not be moving as swiftly as they had previously, and not only is there lower demand now, particularly for property investors, but tighter lending criteria means that brokers, for example, will have to work a lot harder to get the information from clients and go through more hoops to get an application processed. Overall volumes will be down. The auction clearance rates continued lower, according to CoreLogic. Last week, a total of 2,279 auctions were held across the combined capital cities, and they returned a final clearance rate of 58.2%, the lowest clearance rate seen since late 2015. This time last year, the clearance rate was much stronger, with 72.8% of the 2,409 auctions returning a successful result. Melbourne's final clearance rate dropped to 59.8% this week across 1,099 auctions, making it the lowest clearance rate the city has seen since Easter 2014. And Sydney's final auction clearance rate fell to 57.5% across 787 auctions, down from 63.1% the previous week. And over the same week last year, there were more homes went to auction, and the clearance rate was 74.5%. Across the smaller markets, Canberra, Perth and Tasmania saw some clearance rates improved, while rates across Adelaide and Brisbane fell slightly. And amongst the non-capital cities, Geelong returned the highest final clearance rate once again, with a success rate of 83% across 50 auctions. This week, they expect to see lower volumes of auctions, 1,931, down from 2,279 last week. Melbourne is the busiest city for auctions again this week, with 948 auctions, and Sydney is expecting 637 auctions, down from the 787 last week. Adelaide and Perth are expecting to see a slight increase in auction volumes this week, with Adelaide tracking 102 auctions, while Perth currently has 43 scheduled, up from 40 last week. In terms of home price movements, prices are continuing to fall in all states last week, according to the CoreLogic indices, other than Adelaide, which was just a tad higher. Perth fell the most, down 0.11% in the week, followed by Sydney, down 0.10%. The year-to-date movements and the rolling 12-month view shows that Sydney is leading the way down. And as we've said before, we think that Melbourne is 6 to 9 months behind Sydney. But remember that the latest spate of lending tightening has yet to work through, so we expect prices to continue to fall. Of course, prices are still well above those from the previous peak, with Sydney still up 60% and Melbourne up 44%. However, Perth is down 7% and the overall average is 37% higher. Finally, the Australian Financial Security Authority released the Personal Insolvency Activity Statistics for the March quarter 2018. In state and territory terms, personal insolvencies reached a record quarterly high in Western Australia at 1,020 and the highest level since the September quarter 2014 in New South Wales at 2,372. Total personal insolvencies in the March quarter increased slightly by 0.1% compared to the March quarter 2017. And we discuss all of this data in more detail in our video, Some Disturbing Trends. Given all the data we've discussed today, we expect the insolvencies will continue to rise in the months ahead as the impact of flat incomes, rising costs, and big debt continues to press home. If you like what you've seen here today, please like the post and add a comment or a question. I do read them all. And if you want to join the growing band of subscribers who receive alerts when we release new posts, do subscribe now. And if you've already subscribed, many thanks. I really appreciate your support and participation. I'm Martin North, the Principal Analyst at Digital Finance Analytics, and I'll see you next time.